Is there a way to scale cloud ventures the same way people scale deployments in cloud?
I'll give you two answers. The first one is, let's say a company has 100 applications, but it's a smaller company and they don't have the budget to do 100 application pen tests. It's kind of, they prioritize. An external pen test is like, let's just look at the ones that are public and let's just see, we're not going to see what like an employee can do, but like what can an internet person do? And that's kind of the approach I would take for, if you have a lot of cloud accounts, subscriptions, resources in your accounts, I would say you need to do cloud configuration review, right? CSPM. Now, the second approach is for like a large enterprise. If you're a large enterprise and you have 100 accounts because you have like 50 application teams, you're at the size where you have like 5 people working on this app and then 5 people working on this app, you actually might have the budget, or you might have to start thinking about every app that you're doing an app test on. You might want to do a cloud pen test on the infrastructure that supports that app.
Are you someone who used to do network security the traditional way? When I say traditional way, I mean where it used to be in the on-premise environment, and I tried to apply the same thing into the cloud environment. I was in a Black Hat conference or DEF CON conference last week, and we spoke about why cloud security pen test is not just a configure view. Why network security, as it used to be, is now become more of a cloud security, where you have infrastructure in the cloud, and network security pen test in general has also migrated on to become almost the same as cloud security pen test. Now, granted, there's shared responsibility on who can access what part of the network and how much can you pen test and what can you pen test, and it can get really confusing. So just me talking about why the way I think cloud pen testing is working today is almost like the next evolution of network pen testing. I've got a few of my friends who came in who talk about this and to talk about how cloud pen testing, how they do it. And instead of just doing a config review, it's a lot more than that. In this episode, we had Seth Art from Bishop Fox. He is a principal pen tester with them. And we spoke about, what is cloud pen testing? What is the approach you should use to do cloud pen test, where it's a bit more objective based, rather than just looking at the config review and just going, hey, there's nothing over here, I'm just going to go back to the web app pen test. We also spoke about some of the examples that he has seen in real life, where this is how cloud security pen test is beyond just a config review. We have answered a few questions online around the fact that, has there been instances where people have identified things where the responsibility for the cloud is? How far can you go? What's the difference between a security research in the cloud space versus cloud security pen tests? As you can see, this is a very interesting conversation, especially because I was kind of happy to know that it wasn't just me who believed that cloud security pen test as it stands is more than just a config review, but there are a lot more people out there who are already ahead of that curve. So I did a prediction post on this on LinkedIn, just on the same topic. If you are connected with me on LinkedIn or just go on my LinkedIn profile, you'll probably see this question being asked over there. And the responses are interesting as well. So I'll definitely encourage you to share your opinion there. But in the meanwhile, I have Seth Art for you from Bishop Fox to talk about how some of us are looking at the cloud pen testing world with a different lens than beyond just what a CSPM or a CNAPP or a CWPP or any other vulnerability management or posture management tool would provide you. So if you know someone who's looking at doing some cloud security pen test or trying to get into the field and just wants to understand the differences between it and everything else I spoke about right now, feel free to share this episode with your friends, colleagues who may be into the space and maybe looking into becoming more of an offensive security in cloud kind of person instead of just a web app person or a mobile person, but want to add this into their repertoire. In case you're coming here for the second or third time to watch or listen to this episode or any other episodes that I've had so far on Cloud Security Podcast, I would really appreciate if you could take a moment to leave us a review on iTunes or give us a follow on your favorite social media, whether it's YouTube, LinkedIn, Spotify, so that people who are coming on as guests get to know that there's going to be value in for them to come to the podcast. And that also helps us grow and find out more people that we can bring onto the podcast, but also find out how we can help a lot more of you by talking about others on the community who are listening or watching this. Thank you so much for coming and saying hello to me and Shilpi while we were at Black Hat and DEF CON. It was really valuable to kind of hear how we have been able to help a lot of you and things that you would like us to introduce into the podcast and as well as the YouTube channels. Thank you so much for the feedback. And also thank you to folks who were part of the Cloud Security Bootcamp as well, who were there. So thank you and really appreciate all the love and support that you're showing to the podcast, to the training we do and the pen testing we spoke about. So thank you so much for all of that. And I definitely came out of the Black Hat experience with a lot more gratitude than I had walked into. So thank you for making me feel more humble and honored to be able to give back to everyone who has been helpful for me so far by bringing in guests like Seth and others in the past as well who've been able to add a lot more value to everyone. So I hope you enjoy this episode. And this is a continuation of our Offense and Security in Cloud Month. I will see you in the next episode. Peace. Hello and welcome to another episode of Cloud Security Podcast. This is the continuation of our Offense and Security in Cloud Month. And today we have a guest coming up, which I'm on the podcast before, but fortunately we got him again to talk about the, well, let me just bring him on first and then we can talk about the topic. I'm quite excited about this topic and I think it's going to be very eye-opening for a lot of people. Hey, Seth, thanks for coming on the show, man.
Hey, Sheesh, good to be back.
Awesome. Well, actually, maybe to start off with, for people who don't know who Seth is, could you tell us a bit about yourself and how you got to where you are today, man?
Sure. I guess I'll start where I am now. I'm a principal at Bishop Fox, a pen testing consulting company. And the way I got here, I started out in help desk. It was my first job. And then I kind of went and did defensive security. So I worked at the Symantec Managed Security Service for 5 years. And I learned all sorts of awesome stuff about Linux and networking and firewalls and IDSs. But I just had that itch to be offensive. Partially, I was sick of being on call. And so I was like, hey, these offensive guys are never on call. So that sounds fun. But really, I just wanted to hack stuff. So I really got into web app pen testing for a while. And then eventually made this switch to network and infrastructure testing. So internal pen tests, external pen tests, physical pen tests. And then I started, once I got to Bishop Fox, I was trying to get as many internal pen tests as I could. And then I started to realize that some of the internal pen tests I was getting, like entirely cloud infrastructure. And so all of the attack methodologies that I knew about Active Directory and just kind of that traditional network testing, a lot of that was out the window. And I had to like learn really quickly about how to attack, you know, cloud native services, containers, Kubernetes, things like that. So that's what I've been doing for the last 3 years now. And I've been kind of, you know, leading this cloud pen testing practice at Bishop Fox. And I'm happy to be back talking with you.
Awesome. And we're happy to have you as well. And you said you did some network pen testing as well as infrastructure pen testing as well. Probably good to kind of call out, what was it traditionally before you started seeing more cloud? Like what would be an example of a network security pen test or an infrastructure security pen test?
Yeah, right. So, and actually I'll go back one step further. So with app testing, you think it's just web applications, right? But as an application pen tester, I was often asked to do things like mobile testing and thick client testing, and of course, web applications. So then when I switched to network pen testing or added that to my repertoire, it's really baked into external pen tests and internal pen tests. And that was, you know, for a long time, the two main ones. As I mentioned, back when I was doing that, there was also social engineering tests and there was physical tests and wireless tests, but mainly internal pen tests, which is a kind of an assumed breach. You're saying something on the internal network is going to get compromised. An attacker will get there one day. And so what's the worst that can happen? And then external pen test is like, you know, we have all this public infrastructure. We use, you know, I have a WordPress site here. We have our data center and we have all of our microservices there. And, you know, how can somebody with no access, no credentials, potentially gain a foothold into our environment? And so those are the two big ones by far.
Is that the one where I think for people who may have done the off-spec course of security, the Nmap minus A, I just, you know, well, hopefully you're not doing Nmap minus A, but the intent is to do it silently. But a lot of the script critics, I remember, because I was one of them, basically, the moment you go into this environment, you're suddenly going Nmap minus A and finding out every port that's open on the network or what IPs you have. Well, what would be, to your point, the difference between internal or external network pen tests? I guess, is the objective still the same? Is the objective to kind of find out, I guess, vulnerabilities? Or what would be an example of an objective you would have from a network security pen test perspective?
Oh, yeah. No, this is great. So we're going to So with external pen test, your objective is really proving that, seeing is there a way that somebody without any credentials, without social engineering, can they get into the network? And so the ways we would do that is, number one, we're doing vulnerability scanning and looking for, you know, vulnerable software. And then we're doing manual testing. So we're looking for, is there anything publicly facing that's missing authentication, that has default credentials, that has a public, you know, vulnerability that isn't in a vulnerability scanner?
Yeah.
So those things that I talked about are kind of the difference between somebody who just runs the vulnerability scan and stops.
Yeah.
Who kind of tries harder, right? It even extends to the point of password spraying. On an external pen test, if I can get a list of all the employees somehow, or guess, or just, you know, take a wild guess at the naming convention, then I could try summer 2023 against every employee. And that might be my way into the organization from an external pen test. Oh, the way it works with external pen tests is usually
if you find a way in, you do get to kind of like dabble in that internal pen test side as like you're following the thread that you pulled. You know, you talk to the client, can I pull this thread more and see what the impact is? But with an internal pen test, you don't have to find your way in, right? It's a more efficient way to say, let's say somebody will get in one day. An employee is going to act maliciously. An employee might get compromised or, you know, social engineered, like, or, you know, something there's, or we call it the evil maid attack. What if somebody just walks into the building, plugs into the network jack, and like, what's the worst that can happen in that case? And so that's internal pen testing. You're trying to, the objective there is, if one of those things happen, if you get in, what's the worst that can happen? Where's the most sensitive data? And is there a path to get to it?
And you also mentioned assumed breach and objective-based pen test as well. What's the relevance of that in the cloud pen test context? Like, as in, for people who may not know what assumed breach is or what objective-based cloud pen test is, what's the difference, I guess, and how would you describe it to people who don't know what that is?
Yeah, I guess I'll start with the traditional. So with assumed breach, it's kind of that is the difference between internal and external, right? With internal, you're starting from the assumed breach. You're assuming a breach. That's what gives you your internal foothold. Now, objective-based, so this is the, I've always treated internal pen tests as objective-based. And actually, Shannon McHale was just talking about this in a recent interview, where the first step of a good penetration test is to talk with your client and say, you know, what are you concerned about? Where is the most sensitive data? And then that becomes your objective, or at Bishop Fox, we call it the trophy target. And then the test is designed to try to get to the objective, to accomplish the objective. And then a good penetration tester will write the report if they are successful, and they'll say, from the perspective of this type of user, I was able to complete the objective and get to this type of data. A lot of times it's a pet peeve of mine when pen testers say an attacker got to this type of data. Well, like, who's the attacker, right? Is it an employee? Is it the like CEO who, you know, of course, that, you know, yes, they have access to the important data. That's okay. Yeah. So when it turns in the cloud, it's really the same, right? So cloud penetration testing is kind of a combination of that internal pen testing and external pen testing. But I think that the right way to do it is assumed breach. And well, the internal portion should be assumed breach, and it should always be objective based. You know, the whole point of this is we're coming into your organization as a consultancy or as your internal pen test team. And, you know, it's really important to know what you're looking for at the beginning of the test, because that guides what you're going to do in your time box, right? Pen testers don't have unlimited time. Attackers do. But so it's really important for pen testers, whether they're internal or consultants, to kind of get as much white box access as possible, work with the client. Like, we shouldn't have to figure out where the important data is. That's a question that you should talk to with your, you know, stakeholders.
And I think to your point about limited time versus limited budget as well. So sometimes you have to cut scope just because of limited budget on the client side. I think we're all like running against something, either against time or the budget that is allocated to us as well. So making the most of what we would have. I was watching this the other day and someone said network pen test at the moment is dead. Would you kind of feel it is dead, or would you say, I think the way I see it, the traditional version is dead maybe, but would you say, when was the last time you heard someone do a network pen test or an infrastructure pen test?
I think it's not dead. One of the things that attracted me to cloud pen test was that I always loved Active Directory internal pen tests. And I realized that more and more organizations were moving away from Active Directory to the cloud, at least for their infrastructure. You know, maybe their corporate side is still Active Directory. And now we're seeing a kind of uptick. Organizations are finally going to Azure Active Directory. So I wanted to learn this skill set to kind of future-proof myself, right? This cloud, like more and more infrastructure is moving to the cloud. I realized early on the techniques, the technologies are very different. So I wanted to learn that. But by no means is internal pen testing in the traditional sense dead. It's just on the decline. So, I mean, I think at least we'll be doing Active Directory pen tests for 10 years, you know, probably 20 years. There's still AS400s around. Like, we're
really,
this is not going anywhere. It's just that cloud pen test is certainly growing at a much faster rate, in my opinion.
Fair enough. And I think that kind of is another question that I had, because at least the thought that does exist based on the conversation that I had at Black Hat last week and with Red Teamers and otherwise, a lot of people have called out the fact that, including one of the episodes that will come out this weekend with Carl, who wrote the book on the whole Azure pen testing piece. There is a general understanding that the next evolution of network security is more your cloud pen test in a lot of ways, because if most of the infrastructure is in the cloud, whether it's your IaaS, PaaS, or SaaS, or whatever, that's where the next level of network pen testing is coming, because right now in a traditional environment, it's really hard to get in. Like all the firewall rules and IPS and IDS, all of that kind of done really well and for, done for so many years. The weakest spot seems to be where the cloud misconfiguration other comes in, which kind of brings me to the point there. How would you approach a network pen test or a cloud pen test? Would you kind of say they're the same at the moment? Or would you say, hey, I would do a network pen test and a cloud security pen test? And how would you approach it kind of? Sorry, I've got a multi-loaded question for you, but you can pick whichever one you answer first.
Yeah, no. This is a question I deal with all the time when we're trying to scope work for our clients. And I can tell you how I or how we solve it at Bishop Fox, but I think other places can solve it differently. So it depends on the objective and it depends on where your infrastructure is. As I mentioned, I've done lots of work for companies, like newer companies that don't have any data center, don't have any Active Directory. All their employee identities are in Google Workspace or Azure Active Directory. And then all of their workloads, they're kind of things that used to be in the data center are all in Azure or GCP or AWS. So right. No corporate infrastructure. That would just be a cloud penetration test, right? And then you could focus on the external and the internal. Now, a lot of companies are migrating. So they still have their data center. They still have their corporate network, maybe even their VPN, but they're moving their infrastructure, their services, their databases, all the data into the cloud. And so then it's a case of they might need, at Bishop Fox, we would say you might need an internal pen test and a cloud pen test. And sometimes clients are very specific. They say, we want to make sure that nobody can from the internal network can get to the cloud. Or sometimes they say, we have contractors that have access to the cloud. We want to make sure they cannot get to our corporate network, because you make those bridged connections and now you're exposing risk. And so those are my favorite clients to work with, the ones that are kind of like, this is specifically our concern. Like, can you hack it? You know, that's the most fun. And the clients that come to us without the specific concern, they just say, we just want to make sure things are secure. We try to lead them towards that. Like, let's work together and think of what are the things that are most concerning to you, the things that you don't want to have happen. And we'll see if we can make that happen or not.
I love the objective-based approach, man. I think it definitely makes more sense, because that makes the client or the person on the other end who's basically paying money for this get more value out of it as well. Because then anyone they're calling in to do the cloud pen test, they know exactly what the mission was. It puts pressure on the pen testing company as well, because then you're like, oh, if you don't hit that target, they're like, oh, do I give an empty report with zero results? So I guess puts both sides on some kind of pressure at that point in time. Talking about the whole approach as well, are there any examples of findings or attacks that you can share on the whole cloud pen test side? I mean, you and I have been talking for some time and you've been in this field for a while as well. Would love to know if there are any examples that you can share for things you might have found or attacks you've used.
I appreciate you asking that, because I think that makes it click for a lot of people, right? Like reading pen test, sample pen test reports when I was beginning as a pen tester was really helpful to me, right? It's like, it opens your eyes to what's possible. So I would love to share some stories. Okay, so the first one is something that could be caught in a configuration review, actually, or probably would be cloud configuration review, but would share the story of kind of what happens next and where all the things that happened after a normal configuration review might end. So in this one test, this is an AWS, and we found a role that it looks like they accidentally allowed anybody to assume the role. It was kind of like a test. Like you could actually see kind of like commented out, or maybe not even commented out in the next section, in the next stanza. It was supposed to be just like Lambda was supposed to be able to assume the role. But right. The troubleshooting one was still, the debug one was still there. So anybody could assume the role. And now that's bad, but what is required to assume a role? You need to know the name of the role. Right. So it's not as bad as it seems, because anybody on the internet isn't automatically going to know the name of this role, but it's kind of a good exercise. Who can assume that role? Who knows the name of that role? Any current employee, any previous employee, right? So now you have a role that says, Bob, who used to work here 2 years ago, he can just assume this role and do anything that that role can do. And so what we found is that role could invoke lambdas, but it could not edit them or change them. Okay. Now here's another place in pen testing where you're kind of stuck. Like I can invoke a lambda, but how am I going to get that to do something malicious?
Yeah.
So because on our cloud pen test, we asked for read-only access and we kind of use that white box approach. So we had read-only access so we could read all of the lambda functions. And we found a lambda function kind of combing through every single one that had a remote code execution vulnerability. So now we can invoke the lambda and have it do a callback back to our like hacker attack box, kind of like OSCP style, So now we went from, okay, now we have this, pretend Bob can assume the role, get a callback from the Lambda, and guess what permissions that Lambda had access to? Read all the secrets in Secrets Manager, right? And so once we access Secrets Manager, now it's a question of, well, which of these secrets is the coolest? And we found that they had an admin API token for their backend service, like with all their most sensitive data in the Secrets Manager. So that can kind of complete that process. And it's just a really cool process, right? Like a configure view might flag that, but this is where you want an experienced pen tester kind of walk through this multi-step approach and say, actually, I turned this into somebody who used to work at this company could gain access to the production API.
It's funny because as you kind of were saying that as well, it kind of made me think that a lot of people kind of stop at the configure view part for cloud engines. I think you and I spoke about this, and I've spoken to other people about this as well. And you're clearly, with that example, you went beyond the... It's one thing to know that there's an IAM role that can be assumed by anyone, and another to use that skill set and the knowledge of cloud and how cloud works to be able to go, okay, how do I trigger the Lambda? How do I take it to the next step? And maybe, I know you would have answered this before, but how would you describe a cloud pen test these days? Because I feel like a lot of people kind of just go, oh, isn't that just configure view? And it's funny, I think I did a post yesterday, and the general understanding is, oh, it's usually identity and service review of access, because, you know, the shared responsibility model, hey, primarily is IAM. But then you kind of like start adding more layers to it, go, oh, there's a PaaS service where, I mean, I could have data in there. How would you describe cloud pen test for people listening to this conversation going, oh, I'm traditionally a network security pen test. I don't know what the hell a cloud security pen test is. How would you describe that if we do believe it's more than configure view?
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll answer that. Let's go back to, because I like that we're talking about network pen testing. I don't think about, you know, traditional network pen testing as much these days. But okay, so we talked about in a traditional network pen test, you might have a person or a consultancy just run a vuln scan for you and give you the report, right? And everybody's been laughing at that approach for, you know, decades. I have had friends that worked for kind of like PCI pen test shops where they called a pen test, they'd run the vulnerability scan, but they were only allowed to hack on the things that were in the vulnerability scan. So they could like go further, but their scope was limited to the results in the vulnerability scan. So they weren't doing things like Active Directory attacks with like Kerberos thing and like, you know, things like that, right? Or, you know, NTM relay, like that, just, they weren't doing that. And I think that's a mistake. And then you have your full scale, full scope, right? Pen test. It's still not a red team. I view it as a pen test where it's objective-based pen test. You're kind of finding the path of least resistance. You're trying to be as efficient with your time to get the objective. Yeah. So to cloud, I think it's the same, right? You can have, I strongly believe in configure view and CSPM. Mm. I don't think anybody should be doing point in time configure views anymore. The CSPM tools let you do it like daily. And, you know, like, I think that is an amazing technology, but there are limitations. That's your, I like to say like crawl, walk, run, right? Yep. Configure view is your crawl. I view objective-based cloud pen testing, kind of like the finding I just explained, as your walk.
Yeah.
And then red teaming as your run. And I think kind of too many people, you know, jump right to red teaming and say, we need a red team. And the differentiator, both of them are objective-based. Red teams have to be objective-based. Pen test, I think, should be objective-based. But the difference to me is if you have a blue team, if you have defenders, then you're at the point where you're ready to test their response capabilities, their detection capabilities. And so that's where you're ready for red team. But most organizations don't even have, you know, a dedicated blue team. So you're probably not ready for the red team yet. That's where you're still in the walk area. You're in the pen test. Find as many, you know, attack paths as you can. And then one day you can mature to get to the point to you're ready for red teamers. So that's how I view as like, I didn't kind of answer the cloud pen test methodology, but I kind of wanted to frame it into that's where I feel it belongs in the maturity scale.
Mm, and I love the angle you took as well, because we have pen testers who are from different disciplines as well. So network security, I mean, I met a few pen testers in Black Hat who were just mobile app pen testers.
Like
when you ask them, it's like, oh, I just do mobile apps, nothing else. And because each one of them is like a specialization. It's like being a Java expert versus a Python expert. Completely different. Yeah, it sounds like the same programming language, but very different in that perspective. I'm curious, do you have any more examples to share as well? Because I feel like that was a good example. Are there any other examples to kind of further solidify the differentiation? Because I love the example where you almost feel like, oh, configurability would have been enough. Any more examples that you can share with us as well?
Oh, yeah. So actually, just this last month, one of our testers found, it was an Azure pen test, and they found a Bastion host, like an SSH service that allowed, so this is an assumed breach test. So they gave us the credentials of an employee. with Azure Active Directory, right? And so he found that he could log into SSH with his Azure Active Directory credentials, his domain credentials, his email address, essentially. Once he got to the Bastion host in the cloud, he realized this is kind of more like that lift and shift methodology. This is kind of that network approach, but it just happens that everything's in the cloud. So he got onto the Bastion host, just a Linux box. One of the users on that host made their home directory world readable for everybody. And so he just rifled through that user's directory, found that that user had Snowflake credentials, like a third-party database service. And right. So he was able to use those credentials to connect to a third-party, that company's Snowflake database. And it looked at first like it was the file that he got the credentials from was labeled like dev or testing or something. But it turns out once he connected to the Snowflake database, it was production data. Yeah. So, right. It doesn't make, we've seen that a couple of times where we get into a development account and we're like, oh man, it's not prod, you know, we're in development, but then there's just production data in the development account, or the development account has credentials to the production. So that's another one where it's kind of like very similar to the way it always has been, but you know, this is a little different because you're SSHing with domain credentials to a cloud, an Azure VM. I have another one where it doesn't start from the compromised user. So one client wanted to know, if we start you from a compromised EC2 instance with no IAM credentials, just network access to our internal VPC, what's the worst that can happen there? So then we're doing that kind of like end mapping, like you mentioned. What we did is we used white box access and we got a list of all of the DNS like host names, the internal zone. So we scanned and we found a Kubernetes dashboard. And in the Kubernetes dashboard, we had this like, it looked like a read-only profile. We couldn't make any changes. But what we found is an environment variable that was called like GitHub token. And digging deeply in there, I thought it was like a token to the GitHub repositories, but it wasn't. It was actually a token to a GitHub self-hosted runner. So like when you run a GitHub action, it usually runs on GitHub's like containers.
That's right.
But if you're security conscious, you can self-host those runners. So you can have your GitHub actions run on your, these guys had it running on their Kubernetes cluster. But I had the token to register a new rogue runner. So on like Bishop Fox infrastructure, I created an instance, registered a runner. Next time they ran that action, I got the AWS credentials, like the admin AWS credentials for their whole account.
Oh.
So that was a really cool attack that went from just network access to the VPC and a little bit of, you know, readout only access to, you know, full admin access to their account. So like these are the kind of fun things that you get in a cloud pen test that you just don't get in configuration review. That's why I basically talk to anybody who will listen that like, I love configuration review, but it's only the first step.
Yeah. I'm curious, are there any more examples almost like that even further validate the point about the fact that people who think cloud security pen test is just a config review, it kind of helps shed more light onto it. Any more examples that you can think of? Or I don't know, I'm putting the last minute pressure on you, but if you don't have one, that's totally okay as well.
I have one more that's a fun one. So I talked to you about CloudFox and CloudFoxable, these tools that I kind of have worked on to kind of help people learn this process.
Yeah.
But before I did that, I worked on I Am Vulnerable.
Okay.
So I Am Vulnerable is the list that Spencer Getson created a long time ago of like these 30 AWS permissions that if you get these, you most likely have a privileged path to admin.
Yeah.
Like a single IAM permission or maybe two IAM permissions get you a path. So the classic one is like EC2 instance and pass role. Well, sometimes you find that you don't have IAM pass role. So in this one case, a colleague of mine had EC2 star,
okay,
but no pass role. So he could start an EC2 instance, he could stop one. And so you might say, well, how do you privesc in that case, right? So using CloudFox, what he did is he listed all the like 100 EC2 instances. He found one of the EC2 instances that had admin permission.
Yeah.
And so this is a kind of a lesser known technique, but still well known, that you can modify the user data script in a special way that if you restart the instance, it'll do a reverse shell, a callback back to you.
Oh.
So so you don't have to pass a role. You're basically finding a target and then you modify the user data script. And if you put in this like special kind of intro section and reboot it, it will do the callback to you. It'll execute any command you want, but it's easy to have it do a callback to you. And then we just, you know, use those credentials, like, you know, the metadata service, and got admin access to the account. And so this is one that PMapper won't find. PMapper is a cool tool that also helps you find automatically like all of those privileged paths.
Yeah.
But this one's a little bit different because it depends. Like this attack wouldn't have actually done much if none of the EC2 instances that were, you know, available had a highly privileged role. But because one did have a highly privileged role, we were able to get full admin on the account and then get access to the sensitive data.
I did not know that was possible to have like a callback made for an EC2 instance. Because I mean,
So user data script is supposed to just run like the first time you run the instance, but there is a way to trick it to run on a reboot. And so you can kind of just have it send the credentials to you. You can have it do a callback. You can have it, you know, modify the SSH daemon to accept your public key. You can do a bunch of different things. But yeah, it's a pretty awesome cool attack.
That makes me think that, you know how these days, and this is probably where the challenge of cloud pen test comes in. So traditionally, when you get that 2-week period for doing a pen test or however much the budget allows for, usually people scope it out to like, hey, only do these, I don't know, this application, this particular window, or to what your case maybe might have an objective, find the trophy targets, I guess, for lack of a better word. In the cloud context, most people these days, I think I spoke to someone, they had, I don't know, over 100 AWS accounts or multiple subscriptions, multiple tenancies in Azure. And how do you even scale pen testing? Like, you know how you obviously you created a free tool, the CloudFox, there's others out there. I think we had a conversation with Prowler, and I think a few other people who are coming on the show later this month have their own open source tool as well. But those seem to work really well when the target size is quite small, like if you have one AWS account or maybe less than 10. How does it like scale out to hundreds of AWS accounts? Because I mean, that's the promised land that people are going to go on for. Is there a way to scale cloud pen tests the same way people scale deployments in cloud?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'll give you two answers. The first one is, so like an external pen test, right, is kind of an answer to the same question, right? Like let's say a company has 100 applications, but it's a smaller company and they don't have the budget to do 100 application pen tests.
Yeah.
It's kind of they prioritize. An external pen test is like, let's just look at the ones that are public and let's just see, we're not going to see what like an employee can do, but like what can an internet person do, right? Yeah. And that's kind of the approach I would take for if you have a lot of cloud accounts, subscriptions, resources in your accounts, I would say you need to do cloud configuration review, right? CSPM. Yeah. So I think like that's how you get the breadth really quickly. The problem is even those tools like can drown a small team of like one or two people responding to that, right? That could be 6 months of backlog, you know, doing CSPM tools, even the better ones on 100 accounts. And then what you want to do is you want to pick selectively which accounts are the most important to do cloud pen tests on. And so you could do, you know, one account or one subscription, or you could group a couple that are like logically related together. So maybe they have 100 accounts, but maybe there's one big like prod, there's one big dev, and there's like a shared where they kind of use like that's the buckets and that's the images. Like maybe I would say pick those three.
Yeah.
Now, the second approach is for like a large enterprise. So if you're a large enterprise and you have 100 accounts because you have like 50 application teams, you're at the size where you have like five people working on this app and then five people working on this app, you actually might have the budget or you might have to start thinking about every app that you're doing an app test on. You might want to do a cloud pen test on the infrastructure that supports that app. That's the kind of the trend we're seeing at BishopVox, where it makes a lot of sense. Think about it. Like, with DevOps, right? And with DevSecOps, like you have for a while, devs just had to write their app code. And then the IT administrators, the sysadmins did the infra. Now you have devs writing their own Terraform code. So they're writing their app code, they're writing their Terraform code. And so really the app team owns the infrastructure a lot more than it used to. So it makes sense to kind of pair an app test with a cloud test of your app infrastructure, in my opinion.
Yep, I'm of the same opinion as well. So the most of the conversations or the work that we're doing for cloud pen test is similar as well. I love the fact that the scaling can happen because another example that I hear of, and I think Ben did a good talk at Cloud Village DevCon for this around the fact that he scanned for thousands of IPs on the internet just to see, oh, look at this, it's from AWS, it's from Azure, it's from GCP. Is that, I guess that's probably more of the research side, but are those kind of tactics usually applied at a company level as well? And I don't know if you've seen this, but can there be a use case for a person? Well, I guess I'll call it out as a warning that people should not hack things that they don't have permission to. So just keeping putting it out there on the internet. It's like the same thing as accountant. But do you find that for people who are trying to work on this themselves, what's a good approach for them? Because I think maybe slightly related, Zenith has a question as well. which is great conversation, as Shishin said. Would you say the skills are different from traditional for someone who wants to build skills in cloud? And she's kind of put my question in a very succinct way, so I'm grateful to hear. So how would you describe the traditional skill set, whether that can be used to in the cloud context? She's put it really well.
Yeah, so the skills are definitely different, right? I've been a pen testing consultant for 10 years, and it took me 6 months at least to get comfortable in the cloud. And I've, 3 years in, and I'm still learning, every day. So there's a lot of cloud specific skills. I learned a lot about AWS, and then I felt like I kind of only half of that transferred when I started learning about Azure and, GCP, because some of it's the same and a lot of it's different. One of the big differences, kind of more to your question, Ashish, is that in the cloud, there is APIs for everything. Mm-hmm. So in traditional, your first step is to run that Nmap, right? And to run that vulnerability scan, or to do kind of like Active Directory type playbook tests. But in the cloud, a lot of those things don't even apply. Or what you'd be wasting your time scanning a /16 in a cloud provider's VPC for things, because they have an API that'll just give you all of the live IPs. So why scan, however many IPs are in a /16 when you can scan like 200? So learning those kind of shortcuts is a big part of switching your cloud mindset. But yeah, the hard part is, this is for any penetration tester, right? Part of being a penetration tester is learning on the fly. Yeah. I had never registered a rogue GitHub self-hosted runner before I came across that token. In fact, I didn't even know what that token was. I kind of had to spend a couple hours realizing that that wasn't just like a personal access token. So, but now I know that, and now I share that with my colleagues. So there's definitely a lot of like knowledge bases that give you kind of hints and methodology. Mm-hmm. And there's also, it's a big reason that I created CloudFox the way I did. So CloudFox is one of a couple of different, cloud enumeration and attack path enumeration tools. But the thing that I'm really proud about with CloudFox is that it kind of tells you, okay, these are the EC2 instances, or these are the Lambda functions, or these are the SNS topics, but it gives you the commands to then do the next step of exploitation if you have the permission, right? And it's kind of like teaching you how to fish. And this is something that I kind of really loved from AWS PX, a tool. It was like a graphical tool that was in this space. Yeah. And I just love that approach. And so I built it into CloudFox in every way that I could. Long answer, but hopefully I got somewhere close to the question.
Yeah. And hopefully that answers your question as well, Zina. So talking about the skill set as well, then taking this a step further, how do you kind of recommend people learn about this then? I guess the same approach.
Yeah. So I created CloudFox because I wanted to teach people how to find things more quickly and exploit them. But then I realized that I actually needed to teach people how to use CloudFox more efficiently. So for the last 6 months, I've been working on CloudFoxable, which is an intentionally vulnerable environment. A lot of people are familiar with CloudGoat. And CloudGoat has easy, medium, and hard challenges. But even the easy ones aren't so easy, right? If you're brand new into app testing, it still might be too much. Flaws and flaws two were much better for like really entry level. So I kind of took the best of both of those. I love how Flaws kind of like walks you through from like, I've never really even thought about attacking an S3 bucket to here I am. I just kind of attacked an S3 bucket in four different ways. And so that's how I built CloudFoxable. So like the very first challenge is it's Terraform. So you create the Terraform environment in your own AWS account.
Yeah.
But all of the gamification, the flags, the hints, the scoreboard happens at cloudfoxable.bishopfox.com. So you just kind of register there. But the first challenge is as simple as you deploy your Terraform, you access the starting user, and you just have permission to access a single secret. And then you get a flag, right? And then the next challenge is, okay, from my starting user, I realize that I have the ability to assume another role. And then that role has access to the second flag. And it kind of works up and like from that very simple complexity to, quite complex to the point where you get to like CloudGoat. So I'm hoping that, and I've heard really good feedback that it really helps you kind of with very little cloud offensive security knowledge, kind of get to the point where you start to really understand like these attack paths that and kind of some of the stories that I talked about earlier.
And these are, by the way, free to use for people, right? It's not like it's...
Yep. Completely free. In fact, you probably don't even need to register for CloudFoxable. The only thing you don't get if you don't register for the website is the hints. But like the GitHub repo is, at Bishop Fox, CloudFoxable. You can just download it, deploy it to your own Playground account. And then you can kind of go to cloudfoxable.bishopfox.com for the gamification. But it's completely free. And yeah, there's been 8 people that have completed the whole thing. There are, I think, 80 people have started at least one flag at this point. And I really want to, there's like 18 challenges. So I'm trying to make them not so complex that it takes forever to add more. Like I already have another couple that I'm kind of getting ready to push out. So I'm pretty excited.
And I've got a question here from Elias. Do the clients apply Zero Trust strategy? It doesn't look so.
Yeah. We test a lot of clients that use Zero Trust. The idea is that Zero Trust solves a lot of things, but you still need defense in depth. Or maybe they apply partial Zero Trust, right? Their Zero Trust is for their authentication and authorization to get in, but maybe not every service applies Zero Trust. Or sometimes we're talking about the malicious employee aspect. So then you are kind of going Zero Trust, but like even with Zero Trust, you still don't want your malicious employee who's a developer to access the production data, right? So that's what we find a lot, that it's not always just hacking in the sense, in the more obvious sense. It's more like trying to detect, are we doing least privilege properly? Right? Like a lot of organizations at that mid-size, they give their developers read-only access to production. But then like often that read-only access to production, well, number one, you have to make the decision in your company, is there data in production that developers shouldn't have access to, right? Like take the IRS. Every developer in the IRS does not have access to all of our tax returns. The developers should maybe have no access to productions in some environments, right? So if you are giving them read-only or something else, you just got to make sure that even with Zero Trust, that they can't do more than you think they can do.
Yeah. Awesome. Question from Victor. Hey, Victor. Nice to see you again, man. How do you stay ahead of the curve for new services being released daily by the CSPs? Please include research or any undocumented APIs if applicable.
Yeah, that's a great question. And we talked a little bit about this last time I was on the show. There's two areas in CSP kind of security and pen testing. There are the things that are kind of like mistakes that the CSPs like Amazon, Google, Azure make that a researcher like Nick Frechette or somebody like from one of the big kind of CSPM vendors, they find a bug, they alert the CSP and they fix it. And it's really cool because that's fixed for everybody. The world that I live in is more looking for ways our clients have misconfigured this stuff that will never get fixed. And yeah, sometimes if we find an undocumented API, we might alert the vendor and they might say, well, that's actually, it's okay. And then it's fair game for us. But normally if we find like an undocumented API, we would also kind of alert the vendor and they'd fix it. So it's not something we'd be using continuously. But yeah, you should look at Nick Frechette's like recent Forward CloudSec and DEF CON and Black Hat talk about that area about
cloud escape.
Yeah, undocumented APIs and that kind of stuff.
Yep. Awesome. And funny enough, Nick Frechette is coming as a guest as well. So Victor, you might see him.
We can awesome. Answer
directly as well. Perfect. But hopefully that answers your question, Victor. How do you do a network pen test on a public cloud? That's the hyperscaler's responsibility. As in AWS's side is how I read that.
Yeah. I think this is similar to the answer that I just gave, that in a network pen test, I'm not really trying to find vulnerabilities on AWS's hyperscaler. Like if you found something like that, that would not go in a specific client report, that would be something you'd report right to the vendor. So I think to do that, you kind of do the research that like Nick and Christoph at Datadog and a bunch of those guys do, where you're kind of just spending like a month or more like attacking like one specific piece of technology. And hopefully you get lucky and find something cool that you can talk about at a conference.
I think it's kind of where the good point to talk about the whole shared responsibility as well, right? I think that line that is drawn, unfortunately, which blurs out as the more PaaS and SaaS you go, I think that's kind of where it gets lost. But if you are using a PaaS service to a large extent, or even IaaS, the network that people talk about as a VPC, I guess, in an AWS context or a virtual network in an Azure context or whatever, or even Google Cloud with VPC, that is still our responsibility from a network pen test. But if we're talking about how AWS does their networking, that is totally out of our scope. And to your point, if you stumble upon something, then maybe, yes, it's something that you can report back to AWS or Azure or Google Cloud. But from a network pen test, would you say most of your networking side is primarily around what's created by the customer themselves rather than what's done by the CSP?
Yeah, exactly. And even if you're talking about, multi-layers deep, right, the stuff in Lambdas or the stuff in Kubernetes or the stuff in ECS containers, that's kind of where we're working. If like the stuff that the client has configured,
Yeah.
So it is scary, right? We're all using these three big cloud providers. Of course, there's like, you know, more like IBM, Oracle, et cetera. And it is important for us all to put pressure on them, right? Like Wiz and Orca have just been beating up these cloud providers, but for the good of everybody, yeah. right? Like they're finding these cross-tenant vulnerabilities that are super scary. And it's our responsibility to kind of keep on them as a community. But as an individual pen tester, you don't have to like stress about that stuff. You mostly are just helping your clients make sure that their assumptions are correct.
And I think one more example, just to add to that, where the shared responsibility and supply chain kind of mixed was, I recently read about the GitHub Actions piece. I don't know if you heard of that one, where people would have authentication between the GitHub Action as well as the AWS account. But if you don't specify the repository that you should be working with, you're technically allowing every GitHub repository or every GitHub user out there to be able to connect to your AWS account. So like something like that, it's not Amazon's fault at that point in time. It's not even GitHub's fault at that point in time, because I mean, the same way Amazon has made it almost, well, next to impossible to have an S3 bucket open to the internet, like it's a few hoops that you have jumped through. I wonder, there's a responsibility, it's not just on the CSP side, but third-party vendors that integrate into the cloud as well, if they should make the job easy for people who are trying to do the right thing.
Yeah, that brings up so many things. I know we're going for a long time now. But so that's actually a great example of public research versus what we do. So absolutely, there are a lot of GitHub Actions that are misconfigured. And that's not something as a pen tester for like, you know, consultancy. I'm not going to do that for my clients, but I might do that for fun, you know, for research. But there's a lot of people that are looking at that and saying they can publish a report. These are the 10,000 GitHub Actions that anybody in the world can assume. And that's horrifying,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
But I will tell you, I can find that same exact problem on a cloud pen test. So I had a one where it wasn't public to the internet. So that research that I just talked about wouldn't have found it. But every developer of the company could modify the GitHub Actions in 50 repositories. You know, so if you can modify the GitHub Action, then you can do anything that, if that GitHub Action is assuming a role in AWS, yeah. now you have your pick of 50 different roles.
Yeah.
And so what we did was we demonstrated that all the developers could modify the action and basically, you know, get admin in their account, even in production, which again, you don't want your developers to have admin in production. So that's a classic example of like CSPMs will detect the stuff that's like public.
But yeah.
The same misconfiguration could be misconfigured in a way where it's not public, but it's still overly permissive within your organization.
Yeah. Also, maybe what's our calling out? I don't think either you or me are saying that CSPM don't have a space. Like people
I love CSPM. Have, okay, yeah. Right?
They definitely should have a space that they should be used, I guess, by people. Yeah, the free of paid.
Everybody. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So I think I wanted to put it out there because I'm like, I know you and I are talking about how we do cloud benches, but I don't want to call out the fact that, yes, people should still go for a CSPM, whether it's a paid or a free one, because there is no other way to have a continuous monitoring done. I mean, you may do cloud pen tests like once a month, once a quarter or once every 6 months or once every year. What happens in the rest of the time? Like, well, no one really knows. So on that note, I just want to spoke about what people can learn. The final one, which we already answered, is the learning process as well. And I'll put the link for CloudFoxible and CloudFox in the show notes as well. This is basically, that was the end of the technical question about the three. You've kind of done the fun question before, but I'll ask them again, because I'm assuming there's a different answer to it now. The first one being, what do you spend most time on when you're not working on cloud benches, man?
Okay, so it's not really most of my time, but I have a new hobby since the last time we spoke, which is disc golf. Yeah, it's like frisbee golf. So it's like frisbee, but you're just walking around the woods throwing frisbees into these like baskets. And it's quite fun. I've never played golf in my life. I never even understood why people play golf.
Yeah.
But now I get it. Now I understand. It's just kind of walking in the woods with some friends and, you know.
And just throwing disc in, like, are you putting it in a hole or are you just basically?
It's like a basket with chains. So you basically just like throw it like waist height. It hits the chains and goes into the basket. And that's kind of like a hole in golf.
Okay.
Yeah, and my new hobby.
Is it still 9 holes or can you have as many goals as you want?
No, they have courses, like they're 9 or 18.
Oh, right.
It's kind of like, you know, I don't know if you've ever seen like they have like cornhole on ESPN sometimes. Like sometimes you'll see disc golf on ESPN, like it's up and coming.
There you go. Actually, so I've got another question, man. Maybe we should switch gears and answer this one more. Where do you put the boundaries in cloud pen tests to ensure we're entering the CSP territory, which is part of their shared responsibility?
Yeah. Generally, if you're using, so think about, are you using the CSP's APIs as a user would use them, but in kind of a malicious way? Right. So there is an IAM permission to create an EC2 instance. So if I want to create an EC2 instance that's kind of like a Kali or something, that's totally fine. Or like using that IAM permission to update the metadata. Like that's in a malicious way. That's totally fine. What I'm not going to do is try to like, let's say, you know, there's the metadata service that's like on an IP address. I'm not going to try to like vuln scan the metadata service. I'm not going to try to like find a web app vulnerability, like an SSRF in the, you know, metadata service.
Yeah.
That's something that's more like, I mean, you can do that, but that's more like security research and you might want to let your, you know, Amazon know you're doing that, like kind of things like that. So that's kind of where you're living in the world of if a client can do it, you could probably do it. It's kind of hard to go to the CSP side, right? Because like that stuff is kind of abstracted from you. I know it's not a great answer, but I don't have like an easy answer, but it's, you generally will know when you're not in the kind of client side configuration side of the cloud account.
Yeah. I think maybe a good delineation, and if I can use the similar analogy to what you did as well, is that the Amazon IPs on the internet are very well known and people would know what they are. If you're trying to go for any of those, that is totally Amazon territory or Microsoft territory or Google Cloud territory. Yeah, like you'd probably get pinged by them as well. So definitely don't do that. Even if you're doing research, because I think there's a talk at Cloud Village by Ben, who's also known as Nahamsek Online. And he scanned the internet for what are the public IPs of cloud that he can scan. He obviously scanned not just for the AWS one, but just a broad internet scan. And he obviously hit a few AWS, Microsoft, and Google Cloud IPs, which he got dinged for, of course. But he said, hey, what are you doing on our network kind of a thing? But I think it's a best practice just to understand that, to what Seth was saying as well. The boundary that you'd see is if it's a service that is available for a customer, you would probably be able to use it and say, do some research on it. You still would not run an Nmap on it, I would say, right? Like you're not running like a pen testing tool against a IAM service. Or you're not using Pentest against a KMS service.
Not against their services, right. But you can run Nmap on an EC2 instance, no problem, right? Yeah. Or if you have an RDS database, you can do a password brute force on the RDS database. And, you know, like that's all fair because that's what an attacker would do. But there's just like an attacker that's trying to target a client is rarely going to, or if they do find that's just the security research side of things where the attackers, if they find those, they keep them close to vest. Yeah. And that's why it's so important when researchers find those kind of vulnerabilities and alert the CSPMs.
I feel like this used to be a lot more easier when earlier on the cloud pen test, you kind of had to get approval from AWS for, hey, I'm going to do a pen test and you had to fill out a form and all of that. Now there is no form being filled out. So now maybe it's a bit more abstracted. So people would find it hard to know the boundary, especially if you go into the territory of undocumented API. I don't know if it'd be easy to identify, is it undocumented API or like, I don't know how the deep research would be, but hopefully that answers the question for Pramod. But
actually, maybe the best answer is just wait for Nick to come back on and ask him.
Nick for sure is going to come on the show in the coming weeks or so. So he's a very well-known cloud security researcher. So he can definitely answer all these questions because his entire job is focused on finding security research. So on like specifically feels like AWS sometimes because he finds so much on AWS, but he definitely does across the board. So back to the last two questions that I have, which are the not so technical questions. What is something that you're proud of that is not only on social media?
I don't know. I don't know if I have one for that. Nothing's really on my social media. I really just use social media these days for sharing my work and kind of tech related stuff.
Cool. Oh, well, if you don't have one, that's okay as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'll probably go back to the previous answer you had. And last question, what's your favorite cuisine or restaurant that you can share?
All right. So last time I was on the show, I told you like my general cuisine is like Asian, anything Asian flavors, any food. But I would say if I could eat one meal, it would be like blue crabs, like Maryland blue crabs. With some Old Bay. Like I could just sit there and eat crabs, steamed crabs for hours.
Wait,
yeah.
So what makes the blue crabs different to a regular crab? I mean, I'm just...
The blue crab is just the type. They're kind of just like maybe like that big. Like Dungeness crabs are bigger. The crab legs are like really long. So they're like these guys. So you don't really get a ton of meat per crab. So it's not a question of like you finish when you're full. Like you finish when you like give up. And so I like that challenge.
Okay, fair enough. All right, I'm going to hopefully try that one day. But where can people find you on the internet to talk about more cloud pen tests and just around that field? Like, where can they find you on the internet to talk about this?
Yeah. You can always talk to me at Bishop Fox, but I use LinkedIn the most these days, Seth Art. But you can find me at SethSec on Twitter or Mastodon. Yeah, I go by SethSec in the hacker community. Yeah.
I can put the link on the show notes as well. But dude, thanks so much for coming on the show, man, and answering these questions as well. It means a lot. Sounds like a lot of people got value as well. So thank you so much for doing this. And hopefully we can have a part two of this someday, as Zenith has requested. So thanks so much again for this. And thank you everyone who's watching as well. Thank you for joining, and I'll see you in the next episode.